Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Alrighty, Yankees, welcome aboard to the very last April edition of Radio Free America on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Duke Brooks here. Thanks very much for being along. You may have guessed that tonight, based on that piece of music, which is called Opus Number 1 by the Dorsey Brothers, and the big band music from World War II, in my view, was, and I'm not trying to make a pun here, I'm not trying to be fancy or anything, our big band music in World War II was instrumental in our victory, and our victory in World War II was the most complete and absolute victory I think that almost any nation state has ever achieved in any war. Of course, today, victory is a dirty word in Washington. Oh, you can't talk about victory. First off, State Department bureaucrats, spinmeisters in the White House, professional leftists in college campus faculty lounges and newsrooms all over the country. If you say victory, they look at you and they will say, well, what do you mean victory? There can't be victory. There can never be victory. That would be very offensive to the Islamics, the religion of peace. It's pretty unbelievable. There is just... absolutely no question about the fact that we must, here's what it comes down to. We must beat the Mohammedans. Their way of life, their outlook on everything, their society, their culture, the way they do things, the way they think about things on every level and in every way is wholly and totally incompatible with modern Western values. We're talking about a pre-medieval culture that has not changed in any meaningful way in over 1,000 years. They think about things now the same way that they did in the year 1014, when they had invested the Iberian Peninsula of southwestern Europe, which is Spain. Spain and what is now Portugal are located on a landmass at the western end of the Mediterranean that is called the Iberian Peninsula. I think the Romans named it Iberia. They called France Gaul. Got a lot of Gaul, huh? But in any event, They had controlled almost all of Spain for about 303 years in the year 1014. And they do what they were doing then, what they have been doing since the beginning of the 8th century, which is they go around the world with armies, with force, with violence, forcing people into their religion. That is what they do. That's the deal with the Mohammedans. And if we don't do something to stop them, then I guarantee you this nation and all of Western civilization has less than 300 years to go. And the Mohammedans will simply rule everything west of the Caucasus Mountains, everything west of the Ural Mountains. The Russians won't stand for it. But the French will. The British, the Brits have obviously made a decision that they prefer the Mohammedan lifestyle and the Mohammedan way of doing things to the way of doing things in the origin of the English-speaking peoples of this world. They have obviously made a decision that they want as many Mohammedans in their country as possible. 150 or maybe 200 years from now, St. Paul's Cathedral in London, Westminster Abbey, Winchester Cathedral, Chichester, all the great Gothic English British cathedrals will be Mohammedan worship buildings. And that's what they will be. And the British, they will all have to walk around, the women wearing those shrouds. And the Mohammedans will begin to rewrite history so that World War II never happened. World War I never happened. And that will happen in this country as well. Maybe the question is, who's going to stop them? And the answer to that question is, you, maybe, maybe not. If you stand up to them at all, you are a racist. If you question whether their religion is in any way meaningfully different from modern Judeo-Christian religious worship, you will also be called names. Heck, in this country, I guess the next thing that happens is if you are not married to a person of a completely different race from your own, then you are a racist. Speaking of that, anyway, listen, let me, what we've got going on here tonight. Last week, technical difficulties prevented me from getting on the air. Apparently, they are A-OK because our international correspondent, Christian from Denmark, is in the chat room right now lurking. Hey, buddy, how you doing, pal? We've got a couple of different folks in there. Very glad to see you all. Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard, everybody. Yes, Christian, and to you too. Cheers, my friend. Christian, I'm sure we'll be calling in at some point soon. But last week, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Doolittle Raid of April 18th, 1942. And we didn't get on the air. It is the end of April. And I had spoken with someone from an institution in Dayton, Ohio, that is called the National Museum of the United States Air Force. And there is a whole group of historians out there. But I got a call from Ken today, and he said to me, you know, you're on the air at night, and we go off the clock at 5, and we can't do anything after that. These are U.S. Air Force people, almost all of them, either active duty or former United States Air Force. But at the end of the day, they are government employees, and, you know, they only do things at a certain time and in a certain way. It's really kind of, I don't get it. I just don't get it. The Doolittle Raid was one of the most psychologically and politically significant events of the first 6 months of American participation in World War II. It required an amount of bravery and guts that, you know, we do have people in our military today who have that kind of backbone. I'm thankful that we do, not everybody. How about that? There's a woman in the Army. There was a story a month or two ago that she refused to salute the American flag. She is in the Army. And she refused to salute the American flag. If it were me, I would have said, oh, really? Okay, 5 years in Leavenworth, loss of all pay, rank, and privileges, and then you're cashiered with a dishonorable discharge. And that should be what should happen to someone that refuses to properly salute the American flag. I think that's what should happen to anybody. If you are on an army base, if you are on a United States military installation anywhere in the world, and the flag is raised at 0800 and the colors are struck at 17:00, which is 5 in the afternoon, I think that's what time they do it, you should be taken under arrest and you should be thrown in the brig. But I digress. 718-305-7176 is the number here. We're going to talk about the Doolittle raid in a couple of minutes. We're also going to talk about what some people are referring to as the smoking email. This is an email that recently surfaced that came from the White House the week after the Benghazi terrorist attack of September 11th, 2012, in which Suzanne Rice, who was at the time the American ambassador to the UN, and you will remember the Sunday after the Benghazi attack, she was trotted out to all five of the Sunday television network news talk shows, and she was told to tell people and tell people listening and the American people that the reason our embassy was attacked, our consular office, consulate was attacked in Benghazi, was because somebody had put a video on the internet that was very offensive to the peaceful Islamics. And I think everyone realized right away this was a pile of you-know-what. The so-called internet video had nothing whatsoever to do with it. This was a pre-planned terror attack. The White House lied. It is that simple. It is about 12 minutes after the hour here at Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. You know, I have been telling you for some time that conservativenationmedia.com is making some changes, and they will start on May 6th. That's less than a week from now. That's when Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance moves to Tuesdays. Tennessee's issues are spreading out all over America, and Dave Vance brings his veterans' insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Tuesday. So make sure to check him out. It's brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee is moving to Tuesdays, May 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. I just wish that we would start winning even more. You know, of course, I wish the Baltimore Orioles would start winning even more. They're in second place right now in the American League East. They're playing 500 at the moment. They're in second place behind a team from New York City. New York is my hometown. I live in Delaware now, but New York is my hometown. I think most people are aware of that fact. There is an American League East team in New York whose stadium is located in a borough of New York City that is called the Bronx. I don't mention their name. I don't talk about them. And they, you know, I don't like them at all. And it is, you know, we're in second place behind them. I am an Orioles fan. I have been since I was kind of aware of baseball. I'm not really that much of a sports fan, but if I had to pick teams, it would be the Orioles and the Ravens. Don't know about the LA Clippers, but my friend Brad Bierman, who will be calling in about an hour, around 18 minutes, into our second hour tonight after we take a look at some Civil War history on this day in Civil War history, 150 years ago, April 30th, 1864. It's pretty unbelievable how quickly time flies, you know? But in any event, Brad will be calling in. Brad knows an awful lot about this Sterling guy that owns the Los Angeles Clippers. The issues here are much larger than just, oh, he's a racist. All right. They are larger than that. They are bigger than that. Let me tell you, right up at the very beginning, the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution does not apply to this because the government is not doing anything to him. But we're going to hold on to the rest of that for about a little over an hour from now when Brad does call in. We're also going to talk tonight a little bit, I thought you and I would, of John Kerry's latest statement, from which he began to furiously backpedal moments later, day or so later. That's moments in the news cycle, I guess. Calling Israel an apartheid nation. Israel is not an apartheid nation, okay? South Africa was an apartheid nation. Israel is not. John Kerry, I think if a person were to refer to him as being anti-Semitic, I think that they would be correct. I'm positive that they would be. In the meantime, every single diplomatic initiative that John Kerry has tried has failed, because the fact of the matter is, you know, let's face it, John Kerry is a weakling. He's just an arrogant kind of holier-than-thou sort of, you know, I'm better than you type of guy. Unbelievable. Everything he's tried has failed. Everything that he has talked about basically has been wrong, okay? We know about the ridiculous, silly comment, just a kind of a dumb comment, really, you know, I mean, Cliven Bundy, who said that he thought maybe blacks were better off under slavery. I mean, and at that point, people started heading for the hills screaming, I don't know you, as they ran away. I don't blame them. That is a dumb thing to say. Almost as dumb as this guy named Calvin Broaddus, who goes by the name Snoop Doggy Dog. Bill O'Reilly had a video of him the night before last. More than, I would say about 90% of it was bleeped. It was, you know, bleeped out because of the things that the Snoop Dogg person was saying. He doesn't like Mr. Sterling. He called him a bunch of names. He called his mother a bunch of names. But nobody calls him a racist. You know, I mean, I just, it's just unbelievable. But we're going to get into that. We are going to take a quick break right now. When I come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Doolittle Raid of April 18th, 1942. And then after that, our international correspondent Christian will be calling in and your call. So stay right where you are.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
It's Thursday night and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
One goat can make the difference between nourishment and hunger. One goat can make the difference between poverty and sustained income. In the war-torn areas of southern Sudan, one goat can make the difference between life and death. Find out how you can help. Visit goatsfortheoldgoat.org. That's goats, F-O-R, theoldgoat.org. Fighting hunger, one goat at a time.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
So tell, baby, tell your true heart.
All righty, welcome back. The mighty Paula Abdul there. I just love that tune, Blowing Kisses in the Wind. Duke Brooks here on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. This is the Wednesday, April 30th edition of Radio Free America. I kind of hate to point this out. We're going to get to the Doolittle raid in a moment. I'm not happy to point this out, but I'm happy for Jennifer Meadows. She has moved on. Jennifer called me the other night, and sadly, she is no longer on the air with us. And I thought that Jennifer was an excellent broadcaster. I thought that she did great programs. I will miss her a great deal, but Jennifer had something like a near-death experience on Monday when the tornadoes swept through her region of north central Mississippi. She said that she and her husband, Bill, had decided to drive to Tupelo, the birthplace of Elvis Presley, in case you're not aware. She was almost taken out by a tornado, and she mentioned that she is thinking about perhaps going into the ministry. And if that is the calling that someone has, and that is what God wants them to do, then that is what they should do. And we will miss Jennifer a great deal. She is a great person. Maybe one day I can talk her into coming back. I don't know. I hope so. 22 minutes after the top of the hour, and I mentioned the Doolittle raid. Now, let me first tell you this. On Monday night, I had gone to a meeting of our local Republican committee here in Sussex County, Delaware, and there was a lady in the lobby who had an obvious English accent. I asked her if she was from Northern England. She said, yes, I am from Manchester. And she and I chatted for a little while. And I saw her again a short while later. And I asked her if she knew the poem that begins, half a league, onward, all in the valley of death rode the 600. And she said, no, don't know that one. And I said, you don't know the charge of the Light Brigade? And she just kind of sort of tossed it off and said, no, I'm just not really all that big on history, Gov, you know, or mate or something like that. And I thought, this is just, it's unbelievable. When a nation state, when a civilization, when a people forget their own history, that is a very, very serious problem. If you forget history, you're done. Okay. It is all over. That is, you know, when people don't know whence they have come, then they will have no idea where they are. There must be an anchor. A nation state has got to have the ability for its own people to look back and say, these are the things that we did that were right. these are the things that we did that were wrong. These are the reasons why the things were right. The reasons that the wrong things were wrong. Let us do the things that were right. Let us be known for that. Let us not forget the things that were wrong. Let's just learn from them and move forward. If you don't know your own history, if you don't know the bloodshed that your nation has, in which your nation has participated for purposes of either keeping itself free, righting wrongs, being allied with other nations in great struggles, whatever they are, whether they are the Egyptians, you were the Egyptians fighting the Sumerians, whether you were the French fighting the English, whether you were the English fighting the Germans, the Americans fighting ourselves or the English or the Kaiser or Hitler or North Korea, whatever you are, you must know your own history. In case you have forgotten, on December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. I'm not doing a very good FDR impression, but I can tell you that President Roosevelt's speech before the Congress assembled, before a joint session of Congress, which was broadcast all over the country, radio was still it was established, but it was a relatively new phenomenon back then. It's kind of like color television in 1975 or something, I guess. But the speech was riveting, and it was perfect. The speech was as perfect, I think, as a speech asking for a declaration of war could possibly be. And during the first 6 months of World War II, people must remember that the United States was losing World War II. As of April Fool's Day, 1942, we had at least seven battleships at Ford Island, at Pearl Harbor, in Oahu, in Hawaii, that were out of commission. I think maybe the Nevada had been able to get underway and make for San Diego, just basically doing a Navy maneuver called getting the hell out. And we had not been able to mount any kind of a meaningful offensive against Japan, except for a couple of hit-and-run raids in the Solomons and south of the Philippines, places like that, that tactically and strategically were meaningless. And we needed to come up with something that would, number one, restore American morale, and number two, let me read something here from what General Doolittle himself said about this raid. In his autobiography, he wrote, "The Japanese people had been told they were invulnerable. An attack on the Japanese homeland would cause confusion in the minds of the Japanese people and sow doubt about the reliability of their leaders. There was a second and equally important psychological reason for this attack. Americans badly needed a morale boost." There was a U.S. Navy captain whose name was Francis Lowe, and he was the Assistant Chief of Staff for ASW, Anti-Submarine Warfare. And about a month after Pearl Harbor, on January 10th, he reported to the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Ernest King, that Captain Lowe thought that some twin-engine Army bombers might possibly be launched from an aircraft carrier, and the attack could be used to physically attack Japan. The attack was turned over to a guy named Jimmy Doolittle. Jimmy Doolittle at the time had just gone back into the Army. He had been in the Army around World War I. He came out. He became a nationally and world-famous aeronautical engineer. He set a bunch of speed records. I think he had won the Collier Trophy, which was this big, giant trophy that you would get in the 1920s and 30s if you were like some kind of record-setting, famous jockey, airplane pilot, thing like that. And Jimmy Doolittle wanted to strike back at Japan. And now we're going to take a quick break here. And we're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit about the Doolittle Raid. And then we'll have Christian on. And we're going to talk to him about Northwestern Europe, the Baltic states, the Ukraine, etc. You know, just when you think you've heard everything that you can possibly hear, those leftists in Washington pull something else. They're going to keep on doing it until we, the people, throw them out. And I hope that happens in November. But what about in the meantime? What do you plan to do to protect your family, your property, and your sacred rights as an American when the left tries to, quote, redistribute food and who knows what in the name of social justice? I love that term. Social justice. Huh? What are you going to do? You know, they can apply that term to anything and anybody and do anything they want to anybody they want. And all they have to do is say, we're doing this for social justice. Don't wait for those guys. They'll turn our entire world upside down. Get ready right now. Make sure you can provide for your family in an emergency by going to the Patriot Depot, which is America's best-known warehouse for all your patriotic gear and survival needs. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. There you'll find everything from the emergency food supplies to the patriotic gear you'll need today and in that not-too-pleasant-looking future. That's Patriot Depot at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. More about the Doolittle Raid, some current events, some history, Christian calling in from Denmark, and your calls, so don't go away.
Welcome back to The Cat Show. Up next, we have Nico. Nico is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right. A group known especially for their sunspot sleeping, ball chasing, leg rubbing, couch purring, bed leaping, and of course, companionship.
Wonderful. And what breed would you say Nico is?
I'd have to go with a tabby-ish Persian kind of mix.
Tremendous cat.
I'd also like to point out her coat's wonderful mix of colors. Is it black, gray, gray-black, brown?
Somewhere in between.
Indeed.
You know, it's always special when we get to see a cat like this.
Just look how she struts.
It's like she owns the place.
And how she's so incredibly cute in her indifference to commands.
A strong-willed feline.
Ah, and see how she curls up and cuddles her person.
The pitch on her purring is simply perfect.
Nice one.
I know. Fantastic cat.
Fantastic indeed. But really the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Nico is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You've got to try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever. You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Alrighty, welcome back. About 35 minutes now after the hour, 35 minutes into hour number one of this, the Wednesday, April 30th edition of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America, in fact, always wins. Christian is with us. Christian, I'm going to keep you on hold for a moment. Just want to fill people in very briefly on the Doolittle raid. But how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing just fine over here in Denmark, and you're having a great show so far, I think.
I'm going to try to keep that going. Let me talk just for a moment or two about the Doolittle raid and why I think it's important. You know, when I was a kid in the seventh grade, I read Ted Lawson's book called 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. It was made into a movie in 1944, starring Van Johnson, and Spencer Tracy as Lieutenant Colonel Jimmy Doolittle. There were 16 B-25s. The B-25, a twin-engine bomber built by North American Aviation, which is the same company that made the P-51 and the SNJ, two famous World War II airplanes. I mean, seriously, if you know anything at all about the United States in World War II, you've got to know what the P-51 Mustang is. I mean, come on now. You know, it's like not knowing what the M1 Garand rifle was in World War II. Come on, man. In any event, 16 B-25s, they are flying into actual combat for the first time. And they're on the deck of the USS Hornet, which is known as CV-6, was under the command of Captain Mark Mitcher. And these B-25s had names like Whiskey Pete under the command of Lieutenant Robert M. Gray. Most of these guys were like 23. The Green Hornet, which was Dean Hallmark's plane. The famous Ruptured Duck, flown by Lieutenant Ted Lawson. The Whirling Dervish. The Hairy Carrier, the Fickle Finger of Fate, the Avenger, which was Edgar E. McElroy's plane, TNT of Lieutenant Donald G. Smith, and the Bat Out of Hell, flown by Lieutenant William G. Farrow. These were a bunch of young junior officers flying this raid. And the deal was, they were going to take off in combat from an aircraft carrier. The task group comprised the Hornet and the Enterprise. They were both virtually, the Enterprise was launched in 1938, and I think the Hornet was launched in 1940. So these were two virtually new aircraft carriers with 16 B-25s on board. And their plan was to get within about 400 miles of Tokyo and then launch. The airplanes were going to fly one at a time, not in formation, one at a time at low altitudes, and they were going to arrive over Japan at night. And Lieutenant Colonel Doolittle was leading. He was the first airplane off the deck. In Ted Lawson's book, he said that the left main landing gear wheel of Colonel Doolittle's plane, there was a white stripe that was painted all along the port side of the flight deck. And the idea was to keep the B-25's left main wheel on that stripe during takeoff so that its right wingtip would not strike the island, the carrier's island, the bridge. And Ted Lawson said in his book, 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, that Lieutenant Colonel Doolittle's left main wheel stuck to that white stripe on the deck of the Hornet like it was welded to it. And Lieutenant Colonel Doolittle took off, and one at a time, all of them took off. Lieutenant Lawson forgot to deploy his – he forgot to lower his flaps on takeoff. He almost didn't make it. Unbelievable. You know, the things you can forget when you're in a hurry to take off and where there's a lot of pressure on. Look, I can tell you, I know all about it. Trust me. Yeah. But in any event, the plan was to get about 400 miles from Japan, launch the airplanes. Some of the airplanes were going to bomb industrial and military targets in Tokyo. Some were going to bomb Yokohama. Some were going to bomb just all these different Japanese cities, Nagoya, Kobe, all these different Japanese. And they did this for a couple of reasons. They didn't want the Japanese government to be able to conceal. If they had only raided one city, the Japanese government, which was a brutally tyrannical military dictatorship that controlled all information, all goods, all movement of its people. It was not a democracy like it is today. This was old Japan, not the Japan of today. And they went and they did it. But the plan was that they were going to fly straight across Japan, and then they were going to land in China, where Chinese guerrillas, Chinese people not under the control of the Japanese would receive the American pilots, and then airplanes would pick them up and fly them over a region of the Himalaya Mountains known as the Hump, where they would make their way back to the United States. Well, you know, as they say, no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy, and that is correct. Because when they were 600 miles east of Japan in the Pacific Ocean, they sighted a Japanese patrol boat or a trawler. It depends upon who, you know, is writing about it, I guess. And an American cruiser, which I believe was the USS Hampton. Let me see if I can check this. I just want to make sure. In any event, it was the USS Nashville. It was the Nashville. And they saw this Japanese picket boat, which I'm reading now was called the Nito Maru, a 70-ton patrol craft, which had radioed a warning to Japan that it had sighted an American combat vessels. And five of the 11 crew were survived when they were picked up by the Nashville. The Nashville sank the ship, the Japanese boat, and they had to launch 10 hours early and 170 nautical miles further east of Japan than planned. So they went ahead and they took off and they bombed Japan during the day. All of the B-25s crashed in China. One of them, well, 15 of the 16 crashed in China. One of them had to force land in Russia. Because they were all short of fuel because they launched early. And those radial engines on the B-25, I'm sure those things were burning at least 60 or 70 gallons an hour, to say nothing of the amount of oil that they would use. And it's all these guys basically made it out, except for eight Americans that were captured by the Japanese. A couple of them were executed by the Japanese for alleged war crimes. And this raid put a lot of pressure on the Japanese, and it actually kind of set the stage for some strategic moves that Japan made subsequent to this in World War II. Certainly, the Midway campaign of 2 months later was influenced by this American raid. They wanted to, the Yamamoto wanted to take out the American carriers, and he wanted to have a base that was close enough to Hawaii that he could interdict any American naval or air movements to resupply Australia. But it, the thing about this raid that just really, you know, I think about it now. When I was younger, I would have thought, yeah, man, let's go. But now, you know, in my late 50s, I'm thinking, who on earth has the guts to do something? Well, yeah, it's just unbelievable. Absolutely incredible. This is heroism. It is bravery. It is courage at as high as it gets. This is just an amazing mission. There is a an excellent, there have been quite a few books written about it. There's no question about it. You know, the most famous one, of course, is 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. They had a rendezvous every year. The guys would have a reunion every year. They've had the last met, the last one. And I think what I think is the best book about it is the one called The First Heroes. And I'm not sure who wrote that book, by Craig Nelson. I'm sorry. The First Heroes, The Extraordinary Story of the Doolittle Raid, America's First World War II Victory. And it was. I read that book about about 5 years ago, I think. And it was very, very stirring. I would recommend that everyone familiarize yourselves with the Doolittle Raid. It is as steeped and covered in glory as any military operation could possibly be. It is just an amazing effort, and the guys that pulled it off, just unbelievably brave, and they wanted to do something for their country. They wanted to strike back at the enemy. Anybody that wants to do that today is called a racist. I kind of can't believe it. You know, we are at conservativenationmedia.com. We are actually growing. We are getting bigger. And we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher, his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and his love of America, no question about that, to American by Design Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central on conservativenationmedia.com. So stay with us all week long. We are making some big changes. They're going to get bigger all the time, and we are just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. We will have Christian will be joining us in a couple of minutes and your calls, so stay right where you are.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Find a relaxed position to let go of the time you left your daughter's blouse in the dryer too long and it shrunk four sizes, or when you donated her private diary to the public library.
deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Now you know how nice it feels.
All righty, welcome back, everyone. One and all for one, one for all, the Four Musketeers, whatever, I don't, you know. Duke Brooks here. This is Radio Free America and ConservativeNationMedia.com, the Internet's only conservative talk show with an official Northwestern European international correspondent, Christian, my buddy in Denmark. What's going on, pal? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, and I'm having some comments about the whole Clippers Sterling matter. I think it's very interesting, actually. Shall I go ahead?
Okay. Well, yeah, Brad Bierman and I will be talking about this in about half an hour, but sure, let's hear it. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. The thing is, I'm a bit younger than you, and 25 years ago, I was still a teenager. I listened to a lot of gangster rap back then. I know it sounds horrible, but, you know, I was young. So, and one of the rappers, a guy named Ice-T, he had one of the lyrics was, "Freedom of speech, just watch what you say." And it's actually very, relevant today, because back then the black movement was very much into free speech via the gangster rap, because the gangster rap was actually being fought by a parental advisory led by Al Gore's wife, Tipper Gore, actually.
That's right.
And they were all fighting for free speech, and no matter what you said, you should be allowed to say whatever you want, and being offended was almost like a forbidden feeling for the left movement and for the black movement back then. And so therefore, I think that it's fun and actually perhaps more correctly said, sad the way things have turned out, because today it's the exact opposite thing. This guy Sterling, I don't know what he said, but he said it in private, and he didn't make any threats to any people. He didn't say, "Oh, I'm going to go kill that guy or that guy." So I think that it's very bad that he's punished at all. I don't think he should be punished, not at all. You know, things should just go on. If you really believe in free speech, and your constitution says that you do, in the First Amendment. I think it is.
It is the First Amendment, and here is the First Amendment, and I don't have to read it. I know exactly what it says. The First Amendment says,
I sure do.
Quote, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof, nor abridging the freedom of the press, nor of speech, nor of the right of the people to peaceably assemble or to petition the government for a redress of grievances," unquote. Now, what that means is it is very, very specific. It means that the Congress cannot establish an official state religion. It can't prevent anybody from practicing their religion. It can't make it illegal to say anything. it can't make it illegal for the press to print or say anything. It can prohibit the people from assembling in public peacefully, and it can't prohibit the people from basically, as it says, petitioning the government for a redress of grievances.
Yeah.
And
if
the government doesn't arrest you, indict you, if the government doesn't pass a law making it illegal for you to use the N-word or to use a word in the English language with the letter Y appearing in it or something like that, the First Amendment does not apply here. Now, that having been said, because we have a First Amendment, we have certain traditions and cultural norms in this country that have grown up around the First Amendment and have grown up around the Second Amendment, the Third, the Fourth, you know, all of the other ones. The U.S. Now, as an aside, Christian, because you didn't grow up in America, and I want you to come over here soon, and you and I have talked about that. I do want you to come to America. I think you would have a wonderful time here. And you would eat some fantastic, because you know we have wonderful food in the United States.
Yeah, I know you do. But the thing is, to get back to the other thing, the thing is that the media reaction, I was actually shocked that even Fox News jumped on it and were all, you know, it's, oh, that guy from the Clippers, he's toasted. He should just be banned. He's an awful guy and all that. The reaction is straight out of Joseph Goebbels' playbook. You know, getting people so afraid of saying anything that the system is against so that they don't even dare say it at home, because today you can record anything with these smartphones. You can call, take whatever people say in their own home. And I'm telling you this, Joseph Goebbels would have loved it because that was what he did. He wanted the children, he taught the children at the schools, in the Nazi schools, were taught to spy on their parents. If your parents say anything,
just like they were in Stalin's Soviet Union and under Khrushchev and under Brezhnev and Chernyenko and all the rest of them. Absolutely.
And I'm telling you, Sterling has gotten exactly that treatment. And I think that America, and I'm saying that this as a true friend of America, I think America should stop for a minute and think about this, because while you guys are debating this Sterling guy and all the other times that you're debating stuff when the blacks race the race card, China is surpassing you on the economic scale. I just heard today on Fox that that China is going to be the world's number one superpower financially, and I just think that that basically all this talk about racism and stuff like that, I mean, if you want to be number one, then you can't afford that. You can't afford to waste time. If someone says something and hates people because they're black, or if they're white, or if they're red-headed, or they're a football fan, then don't give a damn about it, you know, because you're wasting your time on debating it.
I do agree that...
How much time do you think that the Chinese people are spending on this? How much time do you think that the Chinese people in the Chinese debate?
Zero.
Zero. Zero.
None.
Think about
None.
That for a minute.
Nobody else in the world is. Only the U.S. Only in America can a person say something which he believes is in private. And now, all this having been said, he signed a contract with the National Basketball Association, and I don't think he is a billionaire. He made his money in real estate. I'm not sure exactly how. Brad Bierman's going to be joining us in a little less than 20 minutes. And now, Christian, I'm going to have to go and join the newscast. Can you stand by for about 4 or 5 minutes so we can pick up this
Super.
Discussion?
Super.
All right, very fine. All right, I'm going to put Christian on hold here. We do have Jeff Holtzman coming up with Talk Radio News Service in just about 15 seconds or so. Justin Duckham will be in for Jeff starting next week. News.
Coming to you every hour on the hour. The weather's fine, but there may be a meteor shower.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good evening. For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. The Senate voted 54-42 to reject moving forward on a bill to gradually raise the country's minimum wage to $10.10 per hour. Democrats were unable to convince enough Republicans to join them in support of the measure, which would have raised the floor wage over a three-year period. The Commerce Department reported today that the U.S. economy slowed drastically in the first 3 months of the year. The scant 0.1% growth rate in the gross domestic product, which is the country's total output of goods and services, was well below the 1.1% rise economists had predicted. The last time a quarterly growth rate was so slow was in the final 3 months of 2012, when it was also 0.1%. And only one federal lawmaker has benefited financially from NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, who has imposed a lifetime ban on LA Clippers owner Donald Sterling. That happens to be New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, a Democrat and one of only two African Americans in the Senate. Silver donated $2,600 to Booker's campaign last year. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811, PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, then you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
All right, welcome back. This is Radio Free America on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. This is the beginning of hour number two of the very last April program of 2014, Wednesday, April 30th. Duke Brooks here, 718-305-7176. I am joined by our international correspondent, Christian, who is calling in from Denmark. And we've got somebody in the phone queue here from area code 817. You're on the air. Who's this?
It's your partner, brother. It's Michael.
Michael, yes, I tried to reach you off air a moment ago. Did you want to join our discussion, or did you want to just kind of lurk quietly in the shadows and listen as you drive around and campaign for Wayne Christian for Texas Railroad Commissioner?
Well, I can do whatever you want, boss. I just called in. I've been busy. I haven't heard the show, so I don't know what the discussion is. But I do have some good things to bring to the table. Hey, Christian, it's great to hear you, my friend. Thank you so much for joining my brother Duke today.
Same to you. Great to hear from you soon. We are debating the cleverest thing and the outrageous treatment of that Sterling guy.
The outrageous treatment of who?
Yeah, Michael, I know you've been very busy, but what Christian is talking about is a Mr. Robert or Ronald Sterling, who is the owner of the NBA franchise Los Angeles Clippers. And several days ago, a tape surfaced through an internet gossip site called TMZ that was made by one of his girlfriends, in which he was heard telling the girlfriend not to show up at the games with black people. And the NBA, in 48 hours, basically took his franchise away from him. And he is ordered to not go to the games, not talk to the players and coaches, not even go into his office at the team, and he must sell the team. And Christian and I are talking about the fact that this seems to be a violation of the spirit of the First Amendment. And Christian, you had some additional thoughts on that, right?
I'm just saying that all this race card thing, I think that it's time, you know, to realize the fact that slavery was very, very long time ago, and the segregation thing was a very long time ago too. And basically today, blacks and whites have the same rights and the same opportunities going forward. And there are a lot of very successful black people in all fields. In all fields of life in America, so I just think that the black population in America really gotta, you know, they gotta quit coming up with that race card, and they gotta, you know, they gotta do that for America. They are hurting their country, and basically, you know, at some point in the future, perhaps the white people in America then wouldn't be, you know, for their benefit to stay with the blacks, you know. Because we can't have this going on like forever, because, you know, then China and India and all the other countries will surpass America, and we can't have that.
I agree with you, Christian. How about you, Michael? Are you with us on that?
Well, you know, here's my take on it, and I agree with Christian. excuse me. I swallowed wrong. While it is Mr. Sterling's First Amendment right to believe and express himself however he wants, regardless of how despicable his conduct may be, that is his right to do. However, being a free market guy, if I owned a McDonald's or a Taco Bell or anything like that, and I franchised it out, or Duke, better yet, we'll say you and I, We own this company, Conservative Nation Media. For a better lack of words, we franchise out to individuals to do shows for us. While they have their First Amendment right to speak however they want, if they said something that to our overall company you and I disagreed with, well, we fire their ass. And that would be our right as business owners to do. So, yes, I agree. Mr. Sterling certainly has his First Amendment right to believe however he wants. However, as a franchisee of the NBA, I also feel that they have the right to take the actions they've taken. Now, that said, what I want to know is, when is MSNBC going to fire Al Sharpton for his racist remarks calling the Jewish people heinies? Or when is the record industry going to censure or fire the rap artists that refer to women and other folks in the black community as niggers and hoes. When is the Senate going to censure Harry Reid for calling Obama a light-skinned Negro with a white dialect? So.
Yeah. But may I have a short comment on that? You know, you're speaking about that if a guy in your franchise had a different opinion about something and you would sack him for it. I've actually hired people for the last, 25 years. I've been hiring people to help me because, I'm disabled. And I've never used that tactic because basically that is what the German used back in the Hitler era. It's called Berufsverbot, where people with certain points of view are not allowed to work. So I've actually had the people working for me with all sorts of beliefs, from being very, very right-wing people, almost Nazis, to the other side, where I've had people working for me that were proclaimed communists and in that movement, and then all the in-betweens. And I praise myself for it because if you really believe in free speech, then you're not. Then it's not really fair that you use your financial power to make people not expressing them and living out what they believe.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. And you know, we have to be intellectually honest because this has happened on both sides of the aisle. I mean. Mr. Ilkey, or whatever his name is, the guy that designed Mozilla Firefox, he was fired from his job for his position that I agree with. But at the same time, I am a free market guy. So it's a very wicked line we're walking down here in America, Christian. Well,
yeah, it is. I'm just saying that especially with our point of view, where we have the media stacked against us, then we should be really the frontiers of free speech because we're the ones that actually needs it the most. Because the left, they have all these TV stations and celebrities and whatnot speaking for them. And so it's really our point of view that are under the gun, so we should stand up for it and be defender of free speech.
Do you want to hear the interesting thing about Mr. Sterling? He is a Democrat.
Yeah, I saw that. That was hilarious.
Not only is he a Democrat, but he has given hundreds of thousands of dollars to the NAACP. He has established a camp for socially underprivileged and economically disadvantaged urban minority youths, ostensibly in the hope that maybe some of them will be future NBA talent, and maybe none of them will work as self-employed independent sales and marketing representatives in the recreational pharmaceutical industry. And as you mentioned, on top of that, he is a Democrat. And on top of that, the so-called black people that work for him, he pays them millions of dollars a year. So maybe we need to start judging people based on their actions and not on your words.
Amen.
I would concur with you 100%. But is what you just said, Duke, that's the dichotomy of the Democrat Party. They can be racist and at the same time outreach to the very people they loathe.
Yeah.
That's about right. Yeah, I think you're about right about that. Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, because they are liberal Democrats and because the vast majority of people that work in the news business in this country are themselves ideological liberal Democrats, they're not going to get called on it. But if somebody was a Republican and they said something like that, the media, they would be going into apoplectic paroxysms of self-righteous, you name it. I mean, they'd be going crazy over that. And there is a double standard. There's absolutely no question about it. So this is something I'm hoping that maybe in the future this will begin to abate, and maybe we'll get some common sense waking up. Christian and Mike, thank you both for being with us.
Just one quick remark.
Yeah, Christian.
One quick remark. One funny little thing is that I thought of the other day was that what would the good old Joe McCarthy, famous Joe McCarthy, what would he think if he knew that his job was taken over by the blacks and the gays?
Well, Joe McCarthy was friends with my dad. He also served in the Marines with one of my best friend's dads in World War II. And I think Joe McCarthy is a good guy, and he was a good guy.
Me
and
too.
Frankly, I
Me
don't
too.
Care who knows it. You know what I'm saying? Anyway,
too,
Christian, thank you for calling in. We're going to go into a break.
God bless America.
I hope to talk to you again next week.
Super. God bless America.
All right. Thank you, pal. Have a great night, buddy. Christian is seriously a great guy, and I would just so much love to be able to get him over to the United States. Now, in addition to all of the other nightmares that are taking place in our country today on a national level, one of the worst nightmares that can happen on a personal level to any American is to be the victim of identity theft. If it does happen to you, it could take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. So don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance and sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that even comes close to LifeLock. So to protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. The network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com. Then click on the LifeLock banner. You will be glad you did. Brad Bierman should be joining us in a moment or two. Brad, of course, is a world-class sports broadcaster, writer, and expert. And he has some thoughts on the Clippers situation. So you stay right where you are.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Wildfires burn millions of acres each year. And each year, wildland firefighters like Fire Chief James Hall battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone.
A single ember that escapes from a wildfire can travel more than a mile. It can ignite and destroy your home, your community, or more. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. But you can do something firefighters can't. You can act now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. You can reduce the risk. Do your part. Go to fireadapted.org.
Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
Welcome back, and by now, those of you who are Radio Free America aficionados here on conservativenationmedia.com, you know that that music, which is the Ashokan Farewell and gained fame in the late 1980s, is the theme to the Ken Burns PBS multi-part film called The Civil War. It is time for us to talk a little bit about this day in Civil War history. April 30th, 1864 was a Saturday, and this is from the Civil War Day by Day by E.B. Long and Barbara Long. President Jefferson Davis again wrote to General Polk that, quote, captured slaves should be returned to their masters on proof and payment of charges, unquote. Then personal tragedy struck. Five-year-old Joe Davis died after falling off the high veranda of the Confederate White House in Richmond. Thus, while in the service of their countries, both presidents lost sons. Others died on the battlefield at Whitmore's Mill and Jenkins Ferry, part of the ill-fated federal Camden, Arkansas expedition, at Decatur, Alabama, and in an expedition by Federals from Memphis, Tennessee to Ripley, Mississippi, that lasted until May 9th. Three blockade runners escaped from Galveston, Texas, under cover of night and rain. President Lincoln wrote General Grant to express his, quote, entire satisfaction with what you have done up to this time, so far as I understand it. We are moving in 150 years later into 1864, which has been referred to as the Year of Big Battles. Now then, let me welcome to Radio Free America one of my best friends and world-class sports expert, Brad Bierman. Brad, welcome aboard, buddy. I'm very glad you could make it tonight. How you doing, pal?
Doing well, Duke. Thank you for having me, as always.
My pleasure. Obviously, we've only played 24 games in the major leagues so far this year. We'll get to that in a moment, but obviously, the really major sports story is the National Basketball Association to remove from the ownership of, is it Robert or Donald Sterling?
Donald Sterling.
Okay, to remove from Donald Sterling ownership of the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, I think most people understand why that was done by the NBA, what prompted it anyway. Christian in Denmark and I were just talking about that, but you know a lot more about the NBA ownership than almost anybody I've ever met, and why don't you tell me what you know about this Donald Sterling character?
Donald Sterling has owned the Clippers since 1981. He was the longest tenured owner in the NBA, actually, and He was known for, you know, attending the games, always out in the spotlight, sitting courtside at Clipper games in Los Angeles. Multi businesses in his portfolio. He's a longtime real estate owner, apartment owner in the Los Angeles area, among many other businesses that he had. And the NBA ownership is like the other professional sports leagues, Duke, you know, a close fraternity of, 30 in the case of the NBA, 30 in baseball, 32 in the National Football League. And this fraternity of owners who appoint a commissioner to look out for their best interests in these professional sports, did what they had to do in their group in casting out one of their members.
Now, the NBA apparently, he owns that franchise based upon a contract that he has with the National Basketball Association, which is a private business organization. So the First Amendment does not enter into this. The government cannot prosecute you, and they cannot illegalize speech in this country, although they have from time to time, wrongfully, obviously, but they have. That is not the issue here, because the government isn't going to put him in jail. The government isn't going to arrest him for saying what he said, which I believe he believed, at least ostensibly, was in private to one other individual. It was not a public pronouncement. You remember Marge Schott, who owned the Cincinnati Reds and made a comment about calling some of her players the her million-dollar N-words. You remember that,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And
it's strictly business, Duke, right? As you pointed out,
yep.
and illustrated here, it's strictly business. And what was happening with these remarks that were made by Sterling, the sponsors started dropping out left and right. The players were actually going to go after, probably on strike and not play these playoff games. So it was strictly business. The new commissioner of the NBA is Adam Silver. He only took over the first weekend in February. And it's pretty obvious that he wanted to come in, be decisive, make his mark instantly, and show where he stands as how he's going to govern in the NBA, succeeding David Stern, who had been there for over 25 years.
Well, as an aside, I imagine that Mr. Adam Silver must be getting paid 10 or 15 or maybe more $1 million a year. Do you know what his salary is?
Not exactly, but he's certainly in the multi-millions. It might be approaching 10.
Sure.
Again, he's a rookie commissioner. David Stern was doing probably about $20 million a year, but I'm not sure if Silver is at that level. But point being, of course, they're very well compensated, and it's their job to be the guide and force for these owners.
Well, it is a very, very serious issue here. And I say that for this reason. Obviously, this is not a First Amendment issue, but we have traditions in this country that have grown up around the First Amendment. And even though if you work for a company and you say or write something that is disparaging of that company, you can expect to get fired. And, in some cases, rightly so. There are, in fact, whistleblower laws that protect people that do that sort of thing. However, I am just wondering, given the fact that Donald Sterling has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to the NAACP, given the fact that he pays the, quote, black people, unquote, that work for him millions upon millions of dollars a year, given the fact that he has established the Camp Donald Sterling for urban youths to get out of the mean streets of South Central or where, whatever.
Right.
And given the fact that he's a Democrat, wouldn't it be better to judge him and all other people by their actions and not by their words, especially if those words were intended to be uttered in private and not to be broadcast the way they have been? Does that sound reasonable to you?
It does, but the other part of the story is Donald Sterling has also been involved in court cases, lawsuits because of discrimination. I don't have all the specifics and all the details, but this is not his first run-in with a court of law, and there's been accusations of his public behavior being similar to what was recorded in this conversation.
Well, I know that one of his coaches unsuccessfully sued him a couple of years ago, for racial discrimination, whatever it was, but he lost. And now someone the other day and I forget who it was, it might have been the Fox Sports guy, was asked a question as to whether or not Donald Sterling was the wealthiest owner in the NBA, and the answer was not even close. He is a billionaire, but he is nowhere near the wealthiest owner in the NBA. And he's got enough money to tie this thing up in court and to, you know, fight the NBA on a wide variety of things. What do you think the possibility is that he will do that?
There may be a little bit of a fight, Duke, but I think what's going to happen here, about the good old American way, he's going to cash out and make another billion. I mean, not quite that high, but he's going to make hundreds of billions of dollars when he does indeed eventually sell this team.
I think the public pressure is so much that
he's going to sell.
What is the team worth? Minus this controversy, if he had put it on the market a week and a half ago, what's it worth?
I'll tell you this way. The Milwaukee Bucks, just so they were last in the NBA in attendance this past season, 30 out of 30. And they just sold. They were owned by the Cole family, the Senator Cole family from Wisconsin, $550 million. Milwaukee. So what do you think Los Angeles is going to be worth?
Well, where are they into now? When you say attendance, is that people in seats or is that gross receipts at the gate?
That's tickets sold for the year.
Okay, so people don't actually show up. Right. Exactly. Okay. Now, where? How big is the Los Angeles stadium, which the court in which they play? How many?
It's a little
seats?
Bit bigger than Milwaukee's, but the point being that $550 million in Milwaukee gives you an idea. With Milwaukee such a small market, I'd have to say that the Clippers, you know, it's at least $850 million to a billion.
All right, but now that he has been ordered by the NBA to sell it and he has been banned from the facility and banned from talking to players and that sort of thing, that is going to put downward pressure on the price that he might get. So, I'm not a lawyer, but I would think that an attorney might say, hey, the way in which the NBA ordered him essentially out has taken $100 million off the price of the off the market price of the club, and as a result the NBA owes him. I mean, lawyers can do absolutely anything, Brad, as you're aware.
Yes, and the first thing that even has to happen here is there'll be a subcommittee of the NBA Board of Governors. And then they'll present that to the entire board, and they'll go from there. And you're right. Lawyers can do a lot of things, and he is wealthy enough and powerful enough to make this last. But I just don't think that's going to happen. I just think this is going to happen sooner than later, and there'll be new ownership there. But the other side of this, Duke, that I want to mention to you is the whole recording and the leaking of that recording to TMZ, and then TMZ pounding themselves on the chest with this scoop, and then about a half an hour before Adam Silver's press conference to announce the sanctions against Sterling, TMZ comes out and tries to say, hey, we have the scoop on what Silver's about to announce, and they were incorrect. So, I mean, I guess you can gloat when you break a story, but you have to take your lumps when you're not accurate either.
NBC was wrong about that as well, apparently.
Correct.
All right, now,
jump
Brad,
the gun and get a scoop, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, NBC has a very, very long history of really committing royal screw-ups when it comes to news, but I digress. Can you bear with me for about 2 minutes, and when we come back, can we talk a little bit about Major League Baseball?
That sounds good.
Thank you, my friend. All righty, we are going to take a brief break. More with Brad Bierman on sports and other things athletic and your calls right after this, so don't go away.
There are many sounds in your day-to-day life. There are sounds that wake you up. Sounds that make you smile. sounds that energize you. And sounds that help you relax. But there are some sounds that can alert you to danger and can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you information about severe weather events, amber alerts, or other emergencies in your area. With critical information from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know, wherever you are. For more information, visit ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Molon LeBay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeBay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Foreclosure is hard on every member of the family, but your family is not alone. If you're struggling with your mortgage, there is help. To learn about the government's Making Home Affordable program, visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE to speak to a HUD-approved housing counselor. It's free of charge. Visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE today. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, NeighborWorks America, and the Ad Council.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari. You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
All right, welcome back. That is the mighty and immortal George Harrison from the album All Things Must Pass and What Is Life. You know, I guess I almost don't care what is going on in the world. If I can listen to the Beatles for 20 minutes or so, it puts me in a good mood and it gets me thinking that maybe everything is survivable. Brad, right now the Baltimore Orioles at 500. Their game yesterday was canceled with Pittsburgh. And that will be made up tomorrow. But right now they're 12-12. That New York American League East team, you know, the one whose name I will never mention, they're in first place in the AL East. No surprise there. They always are. But it looks like Detroit is having a particularly strong year. And in the National League, it looks like Atlanta and Milwaukee, we were talking about their basketball team a moment ago, Milwaukee is 20-8. We've got some very, very strong teams right now, but that's really not unusual after only, after less than 30 games have been played, is it?
Right. Here we are on April 30th, always a first milestone point. The teams take a look at themselves. How have we, performed in this first month of the season? You know, the Orioles have a chance. You know the old adage of baseball, right, Duke? You know, it's all about pitching, right? Good pitching will be good hitting. And if the Orioles can get the pitching to come around, I know it's a little bit of an if, I think they really have a chance to hang in there and contend for a wild card spot in the American League. But you're right, that New York team, they're just too loaded in the American League East.
It's, I think it was Bernard Kalb or Marvin Kalb many, many years ago talking about when George Steinbrenner owned the team and Billy Martin was the manager. And Billy Martin obviously was very well known for being a loudmouth and a drunk and he and Steinbrenner had battles. And one of the Kalb brothers referred to the team as not just another baseball team, but a pinstripe institution. And maybe he was right about that, but I still kind of hate him. How are your Padres doing this year?
Well, they're trying to get to 500 themselves. They were shut out last night at San Francisco to fall being 500. But that National League West, I think, is up for grabs. The Giants leading. The Dodgers have spent a ton of money, but they have some injuries right now. I think it's up for grabs, and I'd like to see the Padres contend for one of those two wild card spots. Bud Black, the manager, in his eighth season, so I really like to see what he can do now. And really, you know, he's molded the team in his the way he wants, and they have a pretty good starting pitching rotation. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed, even after a month, that they may have a shot at the playoffs.
What on earth was going on apparently last night at the Flyers game? There were a couple of fights that broke out in the stands. Were you paying attention to that?
Well, you know, it's New York and Philly, and they're playing Game 7 this evening. It's right back to playing up in New York, and that's what happens when the Flyers and Rangers fans play, and you get Flyer domination, and they were gloating last night, and some Ranger fans were drinking, and the next thing you know, they were throwing everybody out from one of the sections there. But that's pretty long tradition, let's say, between New York and Philly fans when it comes to a sporting events, because they've been so close, you know, geographically, and such bitter rivals since the Philly has gotten all these teams, you know, the Flyers and to challenge the Rangers, and of course the Phillies and Mets and the Giants and the Eagles.
Philadelphia Flyers were the first NHL expansion team to win the Stanley Cup. And I remember going to games at the Spectrum in the late 60s and early 70s when players like the late Reggie Fleming, number nine, a great reputation as a brawler, Dave Schultz, Bernie Parent. I remember watching Bobby Clark when he was 18 years old. Fred Sherrill was the coach. I mean, you know, those were great glory days for the Philadelphia Flyers. Just a wonderful team, and hockey sure is a fantastic sport. It's a, you know, one of the factors in this NBA situation that we were talking about earlier is that clearly the NBA does not want its own public image to be degraded. It does not want people to be doing things and saying things that bring the NBA into disrepute. That apparently is the contract clause that they use to oust Donald Sterling. But my question is, when are these teams in any of the leagues going to begin realizing that there are millions of people in this country that hold the players up in very high regard, and it seems to be even a worse problem in the NFL. Players getting arrested for a Baltimore Raven got arrested for beating up his wife. They have it on video coming out of an elevator somewhere in a hotel or something. Ray Carruth of the Charlotte, the Carolina Panthers,
right,
convicted of murder.
Yeah,
when
well,
are they going to
I mean, I think
look.
There's a cross-section of society that comes into pro sports, but look at it this way. When you're a professional athlete, and even the case, you know, yesterday of the current Heisman Trophy winner in college football, Jameis Winston of Florida State, for shoplifting.
Yeah, stealing,
you know,
crab legs from a market.
Yeah. When you're the Heisman Trophy winner, of which there's only been, you know, since going back to the late 30s, so X amount of Heisman Trophy winners, once you have won that award, you immediately have to hold yourself to a higher standard as a human being.
Yes, you do.
Because you've just won that award. And so the rules in life
yes,
have changed
do.
For someone in that position, and you've got to realize that. You can't say to yourself, oh, youthful indiscretion, I got back to my college apartment and forgot that I paid. How many of us, even in college, even if we're not as smart as we think we were, forgot that we didn't pay for groceries when we got back to our apartment?
You know I have
it
never.
When you're a professional athlete,
no.
You must carry yourself in life as a member of a professional team.
And these teams all have long legacies to these communities, and all. And as you said, the billions of dollars that teams spend in charity and to put their right place in the community to be good neighbors, et cetera. I mean, it just never has made sense to me how get that and not understand that responsibility.
Well, maybe the leagues have to begin saying, look, you get arrested for something, for any kind of a felony, and you are suspended until the trial. If you are acquitted, you are back on the team with back pay. We've got to start doing something to acknowledge the fact, and this is coming from, as you know, a guy that really doesn't know very much about sports, and that would be me, that these people are held up in very high regard, and some people use the term hero, some use the term role model, and if somebody is a brawler, they're a drunk driver, they're involved with illegal drugs, they are fighting dogs. I can't believe that Michael Vick was welcomed back into the NFL. It doesn't matter how talented he is.
My analogy to that, Duke, is though in Philadelphia, with due process and unions and rights and negotiated contracts, police, get jobs back when they're shown on video punching civilians. I mean,
I know it.
These things happen in society. You know what I'm saying? In all walks of life, in all occupations. There's due process, there's unionization, there's other protections. You could kind of say the same thing. Well, why is that individual allowed back on the police force of the Philadelphia Police Department? Why is Michael Vick allowed back to play in the National Football League? I mean, these things happen.
I agree on both counts. I agree on both counts, and we have got to start holding people, especially those in the public eye, to a standard of you bet we do. And one of my favorite baseball movies is the John Sayles film called Eight Men Out, and that of course is about the fixing of the 1919 World Series when the Chicago White Sox were called the Black Sox, and there were eight of them that apparently took bribes to throw the World Series. Now, if the movie is accurate, and I grant you it might not be, but the owners got together and they hired a federal judge to be the baseball commissioner. And even though in the civil suit against the players, they were acquitted and they were found not guilty of attempting to throw the World Series, which they actually did lose to Cincinnati, I think, that year, Judge Landis came out and apparently said, despite the verdicts of juries, no player who throws a game, no player who sits with a bunch of crooked players and gamblers and discusses the ways and means by which a game can be thrown will ever play professional baseball again. And I suspect that Judge Landis did that, and that rule still holds today. I mean, if you've got guys that are juiced, you've got Mark McGwire, you've got, these guys, I guess, Sammy, some of these other heavy
Alex
hitters.
Well, they gave Alex Rodriguez a one-year ban. He is sitting out this season.
Okay. I don't know if 1 year is sufficient, but the fact of the matter, I mean, take a guy like Pete Rose. Pete Rose gambled, but he gambled on his own team to win. And they won't let him into the Hall of Fame. That's Charlie Hustle. And, everyone says this guy is one of the best players of the second half of the 20th century. He never took drugs to enhance his performance. Why isn't he in Cooperstown? He should be, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's time to look at Pete Rose in the Hall. I think the problem is he made the situation much more worse than it had to be. Instead of coming out and admitting it right away, he played charade and tried to, kept lying and hide it for so long before he finally admitted it. He just could have saved a lot of time, a lot of energy. I think that's why it's taken so long.
Brad, thanks for spending this half hour with me. I always love talking to you, pal, and I hope that we can speak again at some point in the the upcoming weeks, and keep an eye on developments in sports.
As always, and hopefully next time we speak, the Orioles will be up there in the standings.
Boy, I sure hope so, pal. Give Cindy my love, okay?
Will do, Duke. Thanks again for having me on.
Thank you, pal. Have a great evening. All right. Always great to hear from Brad. The guy knows more about sports than, I've often joked, and I know I've mentioned this before, and I can practically feel my girlfriend Linda rolling her eyes behind me, even though I'm not looking at her at this moment. Brad, I believe, has the batting and fielding and pitching statistics of every human being that's ever played professional sports, professional baseball in this country memorized. I don't know if I'm joking either. He's unbelievable. What a great guy. Hey, listen, we are still, and by we, I mean America, we are still the freest country on this earth. Knock wood. But those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com, that's us. We're not going to stand by and let those leftists in Washington take our freedom away. And our own constitutional expert, Matthew Opalisky, is leading that charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time, and what you can do to protect your liberties under the Bill of Rights. That's the Liberty and Constitution Community with Matthew Opalisky, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. A brief break is in our immediate future. Some hangar flying and some commentary upon the news coming up, so don't go away.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
You know, it's okay to rock and roll and party. Just let someone else do the driving. Hi, this is Ray Manzarek of The Doors for RAD. Please don't drink and drive, and don't drive with someone else who's been drinking.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Michael Behrman, inviting you to join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on The Michael Behrman Show.
Hit me!
Right here on ConservativeNationMedia.com.
ConservativeNationRadio.org. forgive me for singing along with Lennon and McCartney and Ringo Starr and the late George Harrison. The Beatles are its monster. Okay. And now, look, I love rock and roll. Well, I love a lot of rock and roll. I don't love all of it. I'm not one of these guys that thinks, if it isn't rock and roll, I don't care about it. Man. No, that's stupid, because if you love music, doesn't matter what the genre is, you're going to find something that you like. For many years, I was a country music jock at a station in Salisbury, Maryland, and very, very well-run, very, very professionally run radio station. No question, absolutely no question about it. To be honest with you, I have never really liked country music. I didn't like it when I was a kid at my cousin's house in Baltimore, where her dad, my late Uncle Rudolph, and my mom and Peggy, everybody would sit around singing these country songs. I didn't care for it then. When I was in Gainesville, Florida in 1981, learning how to fly helicopters, it seemed that there was only one rock and roll station. I was 25 at the time, you know. Everything else was either country or gospel. I just didn't really care for it. And I've often made the statement to people that I only listen to country music when I'm paid to listen to it. The very first night that I was ever a jock on a country station, and I had been in the same building, we had two stations, the same company owned two stations in that same building, and they had three other ones at their other facility in Salisbury. Program director of the country station came to me one afternoon when I was on the air on our classic rock station, which was called 97.1, the Delmarva's Classic Rock, 97.1, the Fox. And it was wonderful. I knew all the music, and I knew all the albums and all the different guitarists and who played bass and all that stuff. Everybody else that worked there was younger than I was, so they didn't know anything about it. But anyway, Paula Sangalier came over, and she said to me, Duke, so-and-so is sick or has quit or whatever it was. Is there any way you could jock on our country station tonight? And I thought, all right, Paula, you are such an excellent person, and you've always been such a great person, and I knew she was a great leader. I said, sure, Paula, I will do that. And they print out a list of the songs that you play. It was all in computer. Here's some inside baseball for you. When somebody is on the air at a radio station nowadays, trust me, they are not playing what they feel like playing. They're not putting together and putting out their own show, and they are certainly not playing requests. But the very first song that I ever played as a country jock, this would have been around 1995 or 96, was this tune by this girl who at the time was 14, I think, named Leanne Rimes, and it was called Blue. And I listened to this, and I thought, you know what? That's actually a pretty great song. It had, obviously, if you know the song, it had a retro feel to it, and she did that yodeling kind of thing in it a couple of times. I mean, it was, you know, it was really a wonderful song. And the next one was called Like the Rain by Clint Black, which I still think is one of the best pieces of I've ever heard. And I thought, all right, maybe I can work with this. And I actually grew to kind of like it a little bit. But, country, it's not my favorite. Rock and roll might be next to classical. And the Beatles, I am convinced that if there is still Western civilization 200 years from now, which the way things are going, frankly, there might not be, that people will still be listening to and whistling Beethoven, And I think that Lennon and McCartney and George Harrison have written some songs that will stand the test of time, as opposed to the songs by a band like Def Leppard that 10 years from now, absolutely nobody is going to remember. Anyway, I do hope to speak with you again next Wednesday night, which will be May 6th, I think, something like that. Anyway, April's been fun. I hope that you have a wonderful week and a great weekend, and I will speak with you again next Wednesday. Have a great one.